And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Was your mother a beaver? Cause damn! If you were a booger, I'd pick you! Did you just fight? Cause you blew it away!
Good morning, Swim World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, May 24th. Happy Victoria Day to all our Canadian friends. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling with the homie, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
Hey, Tassie. We got my top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Ayo!
The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lealis.
Friend.
Lili. And last but not least, making the magic happen, it is JD. He's in the background right now. He's a busy man. He just moved into a new house. He's got electricians over there, but he's running the show. He's just got a lot of balls up in the air he's juggling, so we'll see if he can give us a little attention for an hour or so here, because this guy is busy. But shout out to JD. Shout out to the stream team for joining us live on YouTube right now. Smash that like button. Everybody take a second. Go smash the like button. Leave your comments to help us defeat the mighty algorithm. And if you haven't already, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. Send in your questions and comments for this week's new Beach Steppin' podcast. I promise we'll hit the beach later this week. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. Tweet them in at No Dunks Inc. And finally, big news over at nodunks.com later today to celebrate our record-breaking wedgie season, 54 and counting still, we're dropping another limited edition wedgie t-shirt today. We celebrated hitting 50 with that limited edition white wedgie shirt. Now we got the baby blue. And this one's going to be available from 12 p.m. Eastern until midnight. Only today here, Monday, May 24th. You'll have that window to go purchase this sweet baby blue wedgie t-shirt. You know, the last one, Lili, that OG white shirt, it sold out in like 10 minutes. So we decided, you know, let's give people more time here to go grab one of these bad boys. So you got basically all day again from noon till midnight on May 24th here today to go get that new wedgie shirt. NoDunks.com. All right, man. I'm hyped to talk to you guys here today. Like,
look at this smiley guy.
I don't know if I'm like a prisoner of the moment or all that, but like, that felt like the greatest opening weekend of NBA playoffs.
It was.
Yeah, like usually was, when we've done this before, you get here Monday and we're like, well, don't worry about that game. That was a blowout. Or what can you take from that? Not much. And it feels like there's something that we can really take away and dig into with every game and every series. So let's do it. I got some questions for you guys. We'll break it up into the Eastern Conference first, then we'll get to the Western Conference games. East, just quickly, Saturday, Chris Middleton jumper lifts the Bucks past the Heat in overtime in game one. Also on Saturday, the Nets recovered from a slow start, especially their stars players. They beat the Celtics, though, 104-93. Then on Sunday, Tobias Harris scored 37 to lead the 76ers past the Wizards, 125-118. And then Sunday night, again, sticking with the East, Ice Trey. Trey Young hits the runner with about a second to go to lift the Hawks past the Knicks. So, the first question for you guys, and Trey, you can get us started, is who was, in the Eastern Conference only, the weekend MVP of the playoffs so far?
Chris Lansdell is right. We got a caw-caw incoming, Skeets. You said Eastern Conference only, but I think that Trae Young is the weekend's MVP, regardless of conference. A legendary IPO for Trae Young, that initial playoff offering. One of the great playoff debuts in recent memory. Trae went for 32 points, 10 assists, and 7 rebounds in his first playoff game, joining Derrick Rose, Chris Paul, and LeBron James as the most recent 30 10-point, 10-assist games in their playoff debuts, but it wasn't just the stat line, it was how he did it. The vaunted Knicks defense could not stay in front of Trae Young in the fourth quarter, had 13 points, went 9 of 9 from the free throw line. Some of those were certainly gifts. But Lee, what do free throws do? Win games.
That's right.
Win games. We say it every time there's a free throw in this household. Also, under 10 seconds, Tom Thibodeau brings in a cold goalie. Frank Nicolina gets the call to try and guard Trae Young. He gets roasted and floated. Trae Young hits a game winner with 0.9 seconds left and then shushes the MSG crowd. First time they're really in the stands this year, 15,000 strong. Really loud, Spike Lee going crazy, and Trae Young floats him to death, then shushes the crowd by putting his finger to his nose.
Very high with the finger placement.
I don't want to spell you anymore, New York. I don't blame him. Incredible stuff. He, what did he say? It's quiet as f*** in here after getting heckled by the crowd earlier in the game. The guy embraced the heel role. Looks like he was meant to play it. Incredible stuff from Trae Young yesterday in New York.
Yeah, Tass, what'd you think about Tibbs' decision there to bring in Frankie Ice to try and slow Trae Young and then did the opposite of that? I mean, even Taj Gibson was coming up, throwing some help, and maybe force him that way if you can there, Frankie. Instead, he just blew right by him and got to his spot.
Both guys with the nickname of Ice. I didn't really...
Ice on Ice? Is Jim Ice in the building?
I think so.
Probably.
I think I saw Jim Ice in the background somewhere. Yeah. Listen, I don't think Frank Ntilikina could have played it any better. I mean, he stuck with him for like 30 feet. I think it was really strange that he sits the entire second half and comes out there. I mean, he's basically sitting for like an hour and a half, and now you just go guard the guy. Tibbs brought him in for two possessions, one at the end of the first half and one at the end of the second half. But I thought Tibbs would have a little bit more for Trae Young just overall over the 48 minutes. I mean, Trae Young got a double screen. It was kind of open could do his thing, and he played the game perfectly. He got everybody involved for a lot of the game, picked his spots, and then in the end of the fourth, he just took over, and sure, there was some softy foul calls, no doubt, and the weird Twitter thing going on, complaining about how high his finger was on his face when he shushed the crowd. People are just frickin' weird. But what more could Trae Young do? I thought that was, just a marvelous performance overall. I mean, just to be able to just, do what he wanted out there, frankly. That was gold, man. Everybody in the building, all 15,000 of those fans, plus Tibbs, plus Frank Ntilikina, plus Taj Gibson, knew that he was getting the ball. Lou Williams apparently told him, do not pass. Lou Williams, his teammate, he said, do not pass. Go win this game. And he absolutely was money there. I found it weird. A Tibbs defense wouldn't, bump him, do something with him, get the ball out of his hands, something throughout the game. It wasn't even just that play. Trae took what the defense gave him, and a performance of a lifetime. As Trae said, 15,000 fans chanting the crap out of him from tip. So amazing, amazing for Trae.
Lee, anything to add from Trae Young's unbelievable playoff debut there?
Well, John Collins, I think, was apparently supposed to screen. He waved him off, and John Collins lost his shoe on that play, which was quite incredible. And then Reggie Bullock, who's also another very good defender for the Knicks, I thought he might have been the one to get the assignment on it because he's a bit longer, a bit taller, but he was on Bogdanović, and he kind of shaded off Bogdanović. Now, Trae was going to score that basket, but if Bullock came off, then he would have left Bogdanović, who was actually having a great game himself. So maybe that played into it a little bit, but in the end, Trae Young went past effectively four Knicks defenders to score that one because Julius Randle came over to try to block it, and he floated it up and in, and it was just incredible. I mean, the atmosphere there, the crowd, the noise they were making, it was like a soccer crowd out there, I thought to me. Like, they were just roaring every single play. There were so many highlight plays in this game, so many moments where it looked like one team was in control, then the other team just sort of came back and got the lead there. And so I just think this was an incredible playoff debut from Trae Young at Madison Square Garden against the Knicks, and he floats up the game winner. And you know, he didn't settle for a jump shot. He went into the lane. I love that the most about it is that, you know, he saw the double coming, had that confidence in himself, went inside and took a really good shot and knocked it in. I mean, those could easily roll out, of course, but I just liked the way that he was moving toward the basket. I thought everything about that play was fantastic by him and the Atlanta Hawks. And it is funny. It is funny because he's like, it's funny when he's like,
we're showing you, for those listening, the photo of Trae Young shushing the MSG crowd with his finger placement very high up on the nose.
He's touching his eyebrow a little bit.
Because he's like, he's a little bit lost. He's like, I want to shush them, but I also want to return the FUs to them that they gave me at the start of the game. So it's like, I can't do both. I have to kind of do one or the other. I just want one thing, though. He doesn't have any history, though, with the Knicks themselves and their fans, does he? I know at Oklahoma State or wherever he played college, you know, that was a thing that the fans chanted that. But I was like, I'm like, where what's his beef with the Knicks? They've got nothing there. This is the first game.
The beef with the Knicks is he's getting free throws in the fourth and they want to win a game because they never want to play.
Fine, but at the start of the game, why were they? Why were they so
effing
Trae at the start?
Competitiveness, mate.
It was
playoffs.
I'm telling you, man. Like, what an atmosphere that was. Just watching that game. I mean, the Knicks back. You know, Spike Lee going crazy on the sidelines there. Like, you just wanted to be there. It was, and I know you've been there, Skeets. I know.
Oh,
I mean,
it's the greatest place to watch a basketball game in the world, and that was proven this weekend to be true. It
no better place
is.
For the home team to see their home team lose than Madison Square Garden. Somebody in the chat was saying there's all these great performances at Madison Square Garden. How come none of them are from the Knicks? Trae Young, Jordan, Reggie. What's the Knicks moments?
Well, would have been Alec Burks we would have been talking about here this morning if the Knicks could have pulled this out. 18 in the fourth there for Alec Burks. But anyway, let's keep it going here. We got so much to talk about. So, Tass, you know, Trae Young is an obvious one. It's a great one to start with. Who else, though, in the Eastern Conference deserves a little weekend MVP love?
Well, we'll jump over to Heat Bucks, and the Bucks' Chris Middleton was definitely an MVP because the Bucks squeezed out an OT win over Miami. Middleton hit the game winner at the end of overtime, creating space on a long mid-range jumper. The Bucks were lucky to escape with a win, and Middleton, the MVP for many reasons. First being, if they lost this game, I think the series is over because the mental advantage Miami has over this team after beating them last year and then to win a game that they didn't deserve winning, I think it would have been over. When Miami's two stars and Jimmy Butler shoot 4 of 22 and Bam Adebayo shoots 4 of 15, it should be a blowout. The road team shot 36% the Heat did. It should be a blowout. And I think another huge reason Chris Middleton was MVP, because he was willing to take the big shots throughout the game. Mm-hmm. He was the guy. Game high 27 for him. And the last reason he was MVP was because he stopped the criticism, which surely would have come Giannis Antetokounmpo's way because of Giannis at the free throw line late in this game. Yep. He missed four free throws in the last minute. He was 2 of 6 in the last 1 minute and 6 seconds on the clock, including a 10-second free throw violation with 106 left in a playoff game. He took too long to shoot at the free throw line, broke that 10-second barrier, which never gets called, ever, 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 ever. And that was after he does his free throw routine before he gets the ball. He denies the referee giving him the ball. He says, no, don't give me the ball. I'm going through a full free throw routine where he throws his arm up, throws up the gooseneck, and that takes like 5-6 seconds. Then he gets the ball, and it was well beyond the 10 seconds. You can call it, I guess, but I don't know how you call it with 1 minute left. And then the next time he shot a free throw, he rushed it, and he missed that one. So he is very, very, very lucky with the poor execution down the stretch of the Bucks. He would be getting it for sure. Two-time MVP, couldn't hit the free throws. His team just wasn't performing down the stretch. He was super-duper lucky. Chris Middleton saved the day, and he could have saved the series. I think it would have been over with the way that the Heat shot so poorly from two. I mean, they made it up in three-point land, but Chris Middleton, big MVP from the Milwaukee Bucks. Without him, there's the whole thing changes. The whole narrative changes big time in that game.
Yeah, that was my key to the series, Lili. It was your dream. The free throws, Giannis had to hit them. What did I want? I wanted like 75% at the line. Off to a rough start here in game one. But Middleton coming through with the clutch shot there. It was great defense, I thought, from the Heat, too, on that one. But Middleton, you know, offense beats better offense beats better defense, I guess. Anything to add from what Tass said? Do you agree that if the Heat pull out that victory, in overtime after Jimmy tied it at the end of regulation with the layup there, that they would be in control and probably winning this series, and Middleton may have saved it, like Tess said.
That was a Miami victory there for everything up until that Chris Middleton shot. Just the way that they really just suffocated the Bucks, and they couldn't get into any groove. The Heat controlled the pace, the tempo, even though they weren't playing well. Jimmy Butler pulls it out when his team's down by two and then gets that layup to send the game to overtime. And that, to me, is just like, that's just demoralizing for Milwaukee to have been in that position, and Jimmy just back to haunt them as he did down in the bubble last season. But I think if you're the Bucks, you have to look at this game and say, listen, tough, you know, ugly playoff victory, but we got the win and we really should improve a lot in the next game, because they shot terribly from three-point range in this game. I think they finished 5-for-31, somewhere around there. Drew Holiday had a decent game. He couldn't hit a three. So I think there are some positives to take out of this for Milwaukee in that sense. That, like, listen, if we can win that game, then we should play better and we should be able to blow this team out if our shots are falling and we don't let them hang around, because that's exactly what the Heat do. Dragic off the bench, fantastic again. Duncan Robinson got them going early. And then again, it just felt like Jimmy was going to control that overtime game, or that overtime period, and win the game. But they didn't. So, you know, for the Bucks, I mean, you know, not pretty, but effective enough that they got the victory. And that's all they needed to do in game one. If they can improve, then that things do look better for them in this series. But, you know, Miami's obviously going to try to keep it as dirty and as grimy as they can to put the Bucks under pressure and to put Giannis at the free throw line. I think they'll do that again. I think they'll say, all right, you know what, if the game's tight, let's see if he can make these free throws, because he clunked them and then he took far too long. And, you know, it's a weird call in the playoffs, but it's kind of like, you're taking far too long, man. Just shoot him. But
got that free throw defense from Caron Butler on the sideline counting things out. Honestly, like we talk about like free throw defense, that's not a real thing. But if you got one coach over there whose only job is to count to 10, came through in the clutch.
Yeah.
For the Heat. But yeah, weird stuff. Giannis would be getting killed if the Bucks lost this game. But I actually thought it was good to see him taking Jimmy Butler for a large majority of this game. Mm-hmm. I think that's a lot of the reason why Jimmy Butler went 4 of 22 from the field. He took 9 three-pointers, took a whole bunch of jump shots. Those are not that's not the game that Jimmy Butler wants to play. Mm-hmm. He's a driver, as we saw there in the last play of regulation. Went right by Giannis for the bucket. I think that's what he's going to have to do in game two tonight. If Giannis is guarding him, Jimmy's got to just put his shoulder down, try and get to the free throw line as much as possible. He's not a jump shooter. The Heat shot the ball pretty well, actually, from three-point line, 20 for 40, I think, in game one. So the three-pointer can still be there. They just need somebody to score inside, because Bam wasn't doing it either. So I think Jimmy's just got to be a little bit more locked in. I don't know if he was too locked in, not locked in enough, whatever it was. There's got to be a different level of calibration here, and he's got to be at the rim almost every single time on his shots.
Yeah, I mean, we're of course over the course of this podcast going to be talking up the performances of like Trae Young and, you know, Devin Booker. We'll get to him when we get to the West and stuff like that. But there were like a couple stars that had some stinkers in Julius Randle and Jimmy Butler, Anthony Davis for the Lakers out west. So we'll see whether they can bounce back. As for my East playoff weekend MVP, it was the one game I didn't watch live. And it was the Sixers-Wizards game, but Tobias Harris. I had to catch this one this morning because I had some flag football championship action to go catch, guys. Shout out to Andreas, my godson, coming through with the championship ring. Shout out to Jostens.
Man, you got a ring?
They got rings, TK. Incredible. I should have had a photo.
Welcome to the South,
guys.
Man.
I know. Incredible
championship
stuff.
Championship rings for a six-year-old flag football team?
It's insane.
Unbelievable.
It's insane. But it was an
unbelievable
game,
man. He's
going
to outgrow it by the
man.
Time the ring gets in.
They what's that?
He's going to outgrow it by the time the ring gets in. Right?
No, they're already there. They're just like default rings. Here you go.
Yeah, it's like the Spurs pulling out the ropes. They knew. They already had the rings made. Before the fourth quarter, do they have quarters in flag football?
No, they got two halves. I think it's running clock. No, it was an amazing game. It was incredible. Tie game. The other team scores with 20 seconds to go. So we're like, it's going to go to overtime. I don't even know what the overtime rules were going to be. So they had two plays basically to go the entire field. Obviously a smaller field here with 6, 7, and 8-year-olds. Two plays, final play, game-winning touchdown. Just like ended the game, the walk-off, the runoff, whatever the hell you call it.
Runoff.
It was awesome. Anyway, nice. So I watched Wizards Sixers this morning. This was the one I saved for this morning. And I got to show some love to Tobias Harris, who was incredible in this one, especially with Joel Embiid in foul trouble. Only played 10 first half minutes. But Toby scored 28 of his career playoff high, 37 by half. joining Allen Iverson as the only Sixers with 28-plus points and a half in a playoff game since 97. And he was special. Sixers got the win, 125-118. You know, not all that convincing. I'm actually glad I saved this one till today. I would say of all the games, it was, well, for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe it was that early start there on Sunday. It just lacked the energy of some of these other games. But he was awesome. He took advantage, I thought, of a lot of mismatches when smaller guards got onto him, like Ish Smith and Neto. And he was just in his bag there, Lili. He had everything fall, and he had the turnaround jumper baseline and pull-ups, and he had even a little floater at one point, transition threes. So, you know, again, Embiid's the real MVP of the game, of course. Like, I forget, he's like a plus 20 in this game. But Tobias Harris keeping them in it, scoring the ball, because they didn't get a lot, obviously, from Ben Simmons in terms of scoring the ball. He had another nice line with the 15 and 15 boards and assists. But Toby, man, this was big for him. This is big for the Sixers moving forward. Like, he has to be like a third star. He's got to be Middleton-like, where it's like, yeah, this guy's going to be good for 25 to 30. I mean, that's what you want. We'll see if he can do it for the rest of the series, but awesome first game from Harris.
Yeah, because he was a dud down in the bubble, and I've been very critical of him not stepping up in those moments where they need that other scorer, because you're right, Ben Simmons had a decent line with 15 rebounds or 15 assists, but he's not the scorer. He's not a shooter as such, and they need Tobias Harris in that situation. Okay, Embiid's down. Who's going to step up? And it was him in the first half. And then the second half, you know, Seth Curry hit some shots. They went to him. And so it just feels like the Sixers just got more options, whereas the Wizards are like, okay, they needed Beal to go off. He had a decent game. Westbrook had an okay game. But other than that, everything felt like just kind of found money with the Wizards anytime someone else scored. So the Sixers should win this series pretty comfortably. You know, if Embiid stays on the court early and he dominates inside, like we talked about in the previews, the Sixers really should win, because they seem to have a lot more options than the Wizards do. And last night, you know, or yesterday, the Wizards sort of hung around in this game. But really, once the Sixers sort of got to that spot, they held onto that lead, and they just kept it. They just kept that lead big enough that the Wizards were never really super close to them. But they kind of give themselves a chance, I guess, Washington, if Embiid's off the court. But no, Harris, if he can perform like this, then this series should be over in four games, because you know, he's had a very good season under Doc Rivers, and that was a lot of talk coming into the season, because he had his best season as a Clipper under Doc Rivers. He was almost an all-star this season, and stepping up in the playoffs is a big, big step for him, and glad to see he did it yesterday.
Yeah, it was only the fourth time in 17 career playoff games for Harris that he scored 20 or more points. He has struggled before, but yeah, if he plays like this, then you're right, it's going to be over in four or five. But you know, can he consistently do this? That is, of course, something to watch. All right, let's keep it going here. Unheralded star, East playoffs. Tass, who you got?
Well, I'm going to take it off the floor. There was 15,000 unheralded stars in Madison Square Garden. Those fans just rocking the house. I know we've talked about it already, but I just couldn't get enough. And I don't think it was, you know, the fact that it was game 7 of 8 games and they kind of got me jacked. It was just, you know, that sense of normalcy. Again, the fact that we need freaking basketball fans out there. I thought all those 15,000 fans bringing it from the beginning with the Trae Young right from the get-go. I mean, come on. Like, that right from the beginning, you know, fans are into it, and maybe it
why
was
were they
watching.
Doing it, Tass? Why were they being so mean to it? Can you explain to me the criticism from the crowd on the road?
Chris Kirshner of The Athletic has a good write-up on you know, the background to all that, to Trae Young's performance, to him walking into the tunnel, you know, saying afterwards that it got f***ing quiet in there after I dropped that shot. The whole thing from Oklahoma State. So you go read that write-up. But it was also, I think, the feed that I was watching. I was watching on the NBA app, no commercials. And so throughout the commercial breaks, they had cameras on every one of those 15,000 fans who were going nuts. And I'd say by definition, most of them were what you call bros, basically the definition of bros.
Sure.
But I loved every bro out there. Actually, except for one, which we'll get to a little bit later on. There was one fan who very, very poor taste. But stay tuned for Tweet of the Week for a little bit later on. But yeah, the Knicks fans just reeled me back in. I mean, that was basketball again. It just feels so not. It felt abnormal because we've been watching basketball for now a year plus with zero fans, basically. But man, like what a difference was. You're watching the play-in tournament last week, and we had some fans in Chase Center. making it feel like the playoffs again. But what a difference it was to have Spike Lee hopping there, the entire arena hopping when Obi Toppin was hopping and scoring. I mean, that was just awesome. It was awesome. And yeah, I forgot how fun basketball can be.
Yeah, the Mecca was bumping. Where were they the loudest, Trey? Was it the Quickly 3, Toppin dunk, RJ Barrett dunk, Rose floater to tie things up? I mean, it feels like there's five. Randall hitting that crazy 3 there late.
Probably between the Barrett dunk, monster dunk. There were some great dunks this weekend as well. That was a great one. And the Rose floater. Like, it felt like the Knicks were maybe going over the top there. Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. And as somebody mentioned in the stream team, shout out to the Knicks fans for helping inspire Trae Young to win that game. Couldn't have done it without you, Knicks fans.
Yeah, for sure. So, Lee, are you going to go down to the Fortress here for games 3 or 4? Now, is that a must?
Yes, yeah, I said the other night the prices to the tickets are a little more than I had budgeted for, I'll be honest. So, yeah, I'm gonna get there. I think the atmosphere, though, is going to be electric down there, because it probably still will be 60% Knicks fans at least making the trip, you know, the replants, I guess.
That's
but certainly, I think it'll be like that. But but you know, this series is alive. You know, it really is, and this is exactly what we wanted. You know,
you've saved so much money, Lee, though, on tickets this last year.
You know, splurge a little bit.
Yeah,
man.
I know.
On all those free tickets that you usually get, you save so much money.
I know. But the other thing is, it might even be tough to get tickets right now because they're going to be in such demand. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see what I mean. Well, yeah, no, you're right. Actually, taking game one sure helps give it a little juice there in Atlanta for games 3 or 4 if it's 1-1 or they're up 2-0 or something like that. It was awesome. You're right. This is what we sort of hoped would happen with this series. And it's like, it's, you know, through 48 minutes, it's like, yep, this is what we were expecting. Two really good teams that play hard, some new faces in here, and that they play each other close. And I think these are going to be a lot of like really entertainingly close games. It was a blast. I'll stick with this for Unheralded Stars with the Hawks, because Trae Young gets all the headlines here. But, you know, I think Bogdanovich and Sweet Lou Williams were instrumental in this victory, because the Hawks, they led most of it, but it ended up coming down to the wire, especially after Alec Burks was going crazy. Atlanta was down 3 with 1:11 left, and Bogdanovich hit a 3-pointer to tie things up. That was like, look, we can be honest, was pretty lucky for Hawks fans. It was a pass from Trae that like got deflected right into Bogey's arms, and he just like ripped it right away. He's like, screw it, it's in my hands, I'm shooting it. And he knocked that down to tie things up. That was big. But he had 18 points overall, 4 boards, 2 assists, 2 steals. Again, timely 3-pointers in the fourth. And then Lou Williams, man, he scored 11 of the Hawks' 17 points between the third and fourth quarters, including a run of 7 straight. He had a couple other great dimes to set up some 3-pointers from Gallinari and Bogdanovich. I think he was a game changer in this too, Tass. Like, old Lou Williams, and you said it even talking to Trae Young, like, hey, man, you're shooting this. And when he was on that run, they kept him out there longer because Trae Young went to Nate McMillan and said, hey, man, he's in the Lou zone right now. Like, you don't mess with this. When Lou Williams has it going and he's scoring in bunches and he's playmaking like this, you got to run with it. Just ride that wave. And so Trae Young told that to McMillan, and they kept him out there a little bit longer, and it obviously paid off. I thought he was fantastic. And this is a guy who's got some pretty questionable playoff performances. You know, we know that he's the sixth man of the year guy, time in and time out. But he's got some clunkers on his resume in terms of playoff performances. But maybe in this role, you know, these sort of spot minutes, these little sections of a game, he can still do it. That was fun. And Bogdanovich, again, I'm pairing these two together because I think there's no Hawks win. There's no Trae floater at the end if these guys don't play the way they did.
Yeah, Bogey was great. He yells after every shot he makes. I don't know what language he's yelling in, but he is screaming after every shot he makes. He was so key. And yeah, I guess Nate McMillan just pushed all the right buttons, keeping Lou Williams in there until what, like under 6 into the fourth quarter?
Yep.
With 6 minutes
like
left. And yeah, of course, Twitter going nuts. Where's Trae Young? Lou Williams definitely wins this game. Because of what he did out there. If they didn't trade Rajon Rondo at the trade deadline, then they don't win this game. I think, you know, Rondo fits way better with the Clippers. Lou fits way better with the Hawks. And, that was perfect, Lou. I could not believe Lou Williams and what he did from first half to second half, just taking over. Mm-hmm. Total keys to that game.
Trae, who do you have as an unheralded star in the Eastern Conference?
I I've debated a few unheralded stars. Skeetsington, I thought about giving it to Joe Harris, the only net to hit a three in the first half when the team was really struggling, then the only non-big three net to score in the third quarter. Nets scored 31-28 from KD, Kyrie, and James Harden, but three from Joe Harris, considered that. I thought maybe Kevin Durant is an unheralded star. He played one good half, ended up with 32 points and 12 rebounds. Basically zero flow for the Nets, not much cohesion, and an easy win over the Celtics. But my official unheralded winner, Robert Williams. He went from a game-time decision to 11 points, 9 rebounds, and 9 blocks in 23 minutes. He blocked a James Harden three-pointer. I thought he made a huge impact with his athleticism. It's a fun matchup watching him and Nick Claxton, kind of similar style players. Unfortunately for the Celtics, not only did they lose, Williams looks like he's going to be a little bit limited. He was really limping around with the turf toe there in the second half, but a great performance. They said he has the Celtics postseason record for blocks, but everybody knows that's not true because at some point Bill Russell blocked 100 shots in a playoff game. Right. But Robert Williams had a Russell-like experience in his handful of minutes yesterday. He was really good. The rest of the Celtics were just not good enough to pull off a win against the Nets.
Yeah, Lee, I want to ask you this, and if there's none you want to change, just be honest with me. Mm. Is there a series prediction you want back from the Eastern Conference? Or after one game, you're like, okay, I'm feeling good about all my predictions.
Yeah, I think the Knicks in seven would be the only one I would consider, but again, they still get home court for that game seven, so I'm still riding with the Knicks. I think they can pull it out because I think they definitely steal one down here at the Fortress at some point to get back onto home court advantage. So other than that, I mean, Philadelphia, I think I had them in a sweep. I feel pretty good about that. Same mm-hmm. with the Nets. And there's one other game that I'm forgetting.
Miami, Milwaukee.
I had the Bucks winning that one in seven. I mean, I think that is going to be a long series. And the Bucks just have to pull this one out. They just have to. But Giannis, just quickly as well, to go back to him, a couple of times he had Trevor Ariza on him. And Trevor Ariza, you know, has been a solid vet throughout his career, but he's way too slow and too small for Giannis. And Tyler Hero he had on him a couple of times and passed out of that. So Giannis, eat these guys. That's what he should be doing. He really should be. You know, if Jimmy Butler's on him, that's a different matchup. He's a tough, you know, youngish player compared to Trevor Ariza. But the Bucks, I feel the Bucks really should, you know, dominate this series. I just feel it after that game because they didn't play all that well, but they got the win. But I just think a couple of little improvements here and they can really put the clamps back on Miami. But we know the Heat, we know the way they play. So maybe that one, but other than that, no, I'm going to sort of stay where I am. I feel fairly confident in the rest of the pick still.
Well, I think I would like to take back my Nets in five prediction because I think this might be Nets in four. I think I was too kind in maybe giving Boston. And here's why. The Nets averaged like 119 points per game during the regular season. Celtics held them to 104 on Saturday. You almost have to win that game if that's what's going to happen. And they only scored 93. So, you know, Kemba and Tatum, I'm sure they'll bounce back a little bit. They combined to go 11 for 36 from the field, but this is not looking good. You said it, Trey. Like, the Nets played one good half and still won sort of convincingly. That does not bode well for the Beantown boys of even, like, making this a series or winning a game or two. So I know a couple of you, I guess, Lee, you were one of them. Somebody else in the mix, or maybe it was all of you guys, saying getting the brooms out for that Nets one, but I feel like if I could take one back, I mean, again, you overreact after game ones. So that's what everybody does. But it does not look great for Boston's chances to at least make it a series and maybe not even win a game. Trey, what did you have in this one? Did you?
I had Nets in six, and I'm like you. Skeets.
Oh, okay.
Maybe the Celtics can get one here, but even that, I'm feeling less confident about after game one.
Yeah, and also I'm not feeling that confident about my $100 bet with Tack right now, too. After again, they only have to play like 20 minutes, and it's like, all right, well, we just sort of kicked ass. Oh, boy, there it is every time.
It was crazy. They played one quarter, and then, yeah, we got it.
Tess, no I mean, problem. We should let me take that bet back, because, like, if I lose that bet to you, I'm going to have to sell my godson's championship football
ring. You think
I'll
you can
like
get $100
eBay,
for that?
You know, you see that all the time. Guys get hard-pressed for money. Yeah. Okay. Come on. Okay.
You're right.
Our final question with the Eastern Conference, guys. Favorite, like, highlight or random moment, anything really, that you just wanted to bring some attention to here from the Eastern Conference? Again, Lee, you get it started.
Danilo Gallinari is a veteran. He's been around since 2008. Went with the playoff mohawk yesterday at Madison Square Garden. I mean, he's rocked a mohawk of variants in the past, but this one was the real, like, shave the side of the head. Let's go back to 2002 type of mohawk there from Gallinari. So I don't know if it was because he was in Madison Square Garden, his former team. He was like, yeah, I'm going to come back with the mohawk, or if he was just feeling mohawk that day. I don't know. But it was a unique look. We haven't really seen the mohawk for a while. I mean, Chris Anderson used to have the sort of spiky one, but Danilo sort of had the one, and it was almost like a flat mohawk. So, yeah. Hadn't seen that for a while. Wasn't expecting it from a guy this stage of his career. You sort of think, you know, a younger guy maybe. But no, he rocked it and he pulled it off too. So congratulations, Danilo. Well done.
Like Jay is saying in the stream team, look like De Niro totally. In Taxi Driver. Major Travis Bickle look. So, I mean, back in New York after being drafted there years and years ago, maybe he's paying homage. But yeah, bit of an extreme look. I say stick with it, buddy.
Just also... I know we're on the stream team here. We're on YouTube live. I know JD's busy. But Lee, you didn't grab a photo of it? You have a photo for everything in your life and you couldn't find a photo of Gallinari's mohawk for the people here?
The only one that he had wasn't a great one.
Hey, I asked him for one. I asked him for one. He's like, nah, we're good. We're fine. And now
what
as you're describing
about?
It,
Lee,
I'm
like...
Lee,
you literally have a photo for every fucking thing you've ever done in your life. You can't take 10 seconds to find Gallinari's mohawk? Don't do it now.
I'm doing it right now.
No.
Make sure you slack it straight to JD.
Yeah. Don't put
slack
it up.
Straight to him.
Unbelievable. But it was a crazy look.
On the stream.
It was a crazy look. All right.
Skeets gets mad about a lot of stuff, but this is definitely warranted.
Come on.
Just get a photo of a rooster at the very least. Yeah. It's his nickname. It's cock-a-doodle.
The one that he put up, Gallinari, it's like a side-on view. So you don't get like the whole, like, I would like more like the front-on view so you can see both sides of his head. But there you go. Who's that?
I can't help myself. I have to put it up.
All right. Okay.
I mean, I'll take your side on this one, Lee. Guess what? Looks like a mohawk, everyone. Mm-hmm. You know what a mohawk looks like?
I thought it would have some height.
Come on, it's a mohawk.
Doesn't a mohawk usually have some height?
Yeah.
They can.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, whatever. I don't really care. There's a lot of different mohawks, I think. But yeah, it caught me off guard.
Definitely caught us all by surprise. Okay, Tass, what was your favorite highlight, random moment, observation, whatever?
Well, I just thought it was weird watching the Nets start Blake Griffin at center. And Blake Griffin is at the point of his career where he's just a defensive guy. He is just asked to be a defensive guy. Just run the floor, get dunks, and have a guy come off a pick and roll and just try and defend him as best you can. This is Blake Griffin. This is the most exciting player for me of the 2010s. And now we're at a point where he starts a game and he didn't take a shot. Not one field goal. I just thought that was bonkers watching it happen. Now, I don't know what they do when inevitably they play Joel Embiid and the Sixers in the Eastern Conference Finals. Does Blake Griffin start? DeAndre Jordan come back? Looking too far ahead. I just thought that was nuts. I'm just not ready for that Blake Griffin to not shoot the ball and to just ask, like he was just asked by Kevin Durant, just come on, man, just grind it out with me. Like he was telling him to, you know, pick this guy and do that. I just thought it was weird. He was basically, you know, in the Robert Williams mode of the Nets in that series. And you know, just to give you a Robert Williams stat from the other side, why the Celtics, you know, got to be super pumped. As Trey said, he had 9 blocks, but this is why a steal is way more important than a block. Of those 9 blocks, the Celtics only got 1 of them. 8 of them went out of bounds or directly back to the Nets. So that's kind of
so I
strange.
Guess he's not Bill Russell.
No.
Isn't
Bill
that
Russell
his thing, always tipping it to himself?
Yeah.
Always keeps it in play.
Yeah,
man, so I thought Williams had passed him by, unfortunately.
All right, so Blake Griffin, yeah, taking on obviously a different role there in the Nets game one victory. But Trey, what do you have? What's weird to you or sticks out to you from the
weekend? Well, just
also
with the Nets centers, I thought it was interesting to hear on the broadcast that Jeff Green wants to be the next Vince Carter and just play forever and ever. And I mean, like, he's what year draft was Jeff Green in?
2008, wasn't he?
No,
2007, because he was traded for Ray Allen in 2007, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we're, what, 14 seasons into his career, we got another 10 years of Jeff Green. That's crazy. That's
wow.
crazy to
think.
A lot
more dunks.
Yeah, a lot more dunks, a lot more jerseys. Maybe he will get to every single team, but I don't know. The guy just somehow gets better and better, makes more sense for playoff teams. But one thing that really stuck out to me over the weekend, a lot of hard falls this weekend. Mm. The Kevin Durant one.
Oh,
I don't know how he didn't break his arm, man. Like, he fell on the fast break, fell, and his right arm, like his shooting arm, was behind him when he fell down. And then popped up and played the next play like there was no big deal. Jimmy Butler and Giannis had a big collision midair. They both took a shot down. They both went down hard to the court. We saw the Chris Paul thing. That'll be in the Western Conference talk. LeBron as well. I don't know. The intensity picked up, obviously, for the playoffs, and some players were hitting the ground pretty hard. To not have any actual serious injuries from some of these collisions was lucky stuff, I think.
Oh my God, that Durant one. I'm 100%. I was like, how is he fine? And he like didn't even, he wasn't even like, oh, like, shake it off or anything. He's like, maybe he's just like, he's so rubbery or something like that.
He doesn't look rubbery. He looks bony out there.
Yeah, it's true. Mm. Yeah, he looks, yeah, because every time you see him, you're like, oh yeah, I forget how tall that guy actually is and lanky he is. But yeah, that was scary, but he was fine. So that was good. Just to wrap up the East here. My favorite sort of, I guess, observation, I want to get your take, guys, was the TNT. I mean, it really stuck out in the Hawks-Knicks game. I can't remember if they were using it in other ones, but they had it there in MSG, where those cinematic, like, shallow depth of field cameras that we saw in the Super Bowl and we saw in the Royal Rumble, they were employing this in this game, like, sort of had it, like, floating a lot of the times, like, baseline, almost, like, behind the first layer of the crowd. I thought it looked badass. I mean, it looks like a video game. We saw it again when Trae Young was, like, exiting the floor after his interview with TNT there, and, like, the Steadicam, and, like, again, it's like everything else is out of focus around him, but it's just him. Do you like that look, Lili? We've talked about it before, but, you know, I don't, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot of it in the NBA, but they seemed to give it a go there on the weekend.
You know, I'm a big fan of portrait mode on the iPhone, so...
oh, true. I mean, that's basically what it is.
Yeah, that's essentially what it is. So, yeah, I'm a big fan. I like it. I like to see more of that. Bring us in. I just don't like... I know you tweeted about, I think, Skeetsy, the big ad that came on during the game.
Michelob Ultra ad. Yeah. When, hit a three-pointer in
the corner. Bogdanovic hit the corner three. Yeah, it was massive. You couldn't even see him. You had to go to the replay to see how beautiful it was. So we need to figure out that. Some of the camera stuff good. Some, I guess that's not really camera, is it?
No, it's production. Don't worry. The Monaco F1 race was even worse production-wise than anything we saw from the NBA. Ooh, it was all over the map there on Sunday morning. But yeah, Tass, are you a fan of that? Portrait mode is the best way to put it. That sort of camera that we've talked about.
I am a huge fan of the cinema. I am a huge fan of portrait mode, so yes, I enjoyed every second. And I didn't mind the production. I know we had a Michelob ad, but we also had a great Popeye's chicken sandwich ad read from Kevin Harlan, which informed me that you have barrel-cured pickles on every chicken sandwich. And Kevin Harlan said, give me a barrel-cured pickle anytime! I mean, the production, you miss a play. I know good friend Nate Duncan was really mad about one where we had a squeeze box and we missed a nice play. I get it. It's rough. But, 47 minutes and we missed 1 minute because he had in a half a squeeze box. But if you're watching Nate Duncan on the NBA broadcast do his commentary, it's a squeeze box too. Mm. Why am I talking about Nate Duncan? Anyways, good production. Good production.
All right.
Hey, we're talking ads. Here's an ad I like. Fast and Furious crossover with the Antetokounmpo brothers. Mm. I wasn't expecting that. Obviously, you know, despite the fact that Fast and Furious started with cars and moved to heists, it's really a story about family.
Oh.
Just like the Antetokounmpo brothers coming to America, becoming MVPs, becoming NBA champions. I didn't expect that to be the crossover ad that we were seeing every single time there was a commercial break for ESPN, but I was loving it.
I have an idea for a summer podcast series, Trey. I can't remember if I've run this by you. You, of course, a huge fan of the Fast and Furious series. Me, never seen a single one at all. I mean, of course, know it, but I don't know like what happens in each movie. So I think we should do something where... like, I'm either Fast and you're Furious or something, but we watch it together and break it down. Like, basically do a series on it. Watch each one and talk it out after. And, like, I'll have a million questions and all that. What do you think?
Sign me.
There you go. I knew I wouldn't have to twist your arm on that one.
See ya at Race Wars. That's for- literally the name they give to the race in the first Fast okay. and Furious movie. Race Wars.
Wow.
See you at Race Wars, Skeets.
All right, all right. Not too many spoilers now, but I'm excited. I'm excited.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's go to the Western Conference, guys. Saturday, Lucas, 31-point triple-double, helps the Mavs beat the Clippers 113-102 in Game 1. Saturday night, Lillard leads the three-point barrage there as the Blazers beat the Nuggets 123-109. Sunday, Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton helped the Suns win. In their return to the playoffs, they beat the Lakers 99-90. And then last night, final game of a very long weekend there, the eighth-seeded Grizzlies beat the number-one-seeded Jazz in the series opener, a very close game. So, same questions, but we're flipping it over to the West. Western Conference playoffs, weekend MVP. Lee, who do you have?
Well, I'm going with Devin Booker, and I'll get to him a little bit more in a sec, because apart from, obviously, the big win from the Suns yesterday, the biggest story out of this game is Chris Paul's health, and what it will be for the remainder of this series and however long the Suns are in the playoffs, because he injured himself again in a very sort of innocuous play, that sort of right shoulder collarbone area. Collided with his own teammate, actually, Cam Johnson there. It didn't look too bad, but he immediately sort of grabbed at that spot. He left the game. And he did come back, but he clearly wasn't 100%. He was trying to avoid his right arm as much as possible. He lost the handle several times, like without really having a lot of pressure under him. He shot and made a couple, but they were high effort shots to just sort of get that ball up there. So we'll see. I mean, he says he's going to be fine, but he said he heard a crack, which is just awful to hear that. So obviously we hope Chris Paul can play, but that looked really bad for him for the Suns.
And like think about his playoff like injuries too,
yeah.
Over what, the last 6 years or something like that. Like he's had the hamstring, a broken hand, another hamstring in 18.
Yeah.
And
the groin, I think.
Yeah, and then now possibly the shoulder. Yeah.
So anyway, we'll see what happens there. Like I say, he said he's going to be okay, but he certainly didn't look it. But Devin Booker, again, super impressive in his playoff debut. The numbers great. 34 points, shot well, 7 rebounds, 8 assists. A couple of very Chris Paul-y sort of zigzag moves into the lane there too for either that mid-range shot or to pass to someone in the corner, and a couple of those guys knocked down threes. And he really, I thought, was impressive in that last quarter when you knew the Lakers were going to make a bit of a push there. And Devin Booker scored or assisted on 5 of their last 7 field goals. And I thought he had good pace to his game throughout. You know, for a rookie in his playoffs, he didn't seem to get rushed. He seemed to take good shots, made them, got to the free throw line, hit a couple of threes. Really didn't have, I think he had 6 turnovers, sure, but that's fine. You know, his team hung on to a victory there, and the Lakers didn't look great. But I talked about this before the series. Game 1 was pivotal. The Suns had to win. And even if they do win, it's kind of like, well, LeBron always comes back after winning Game 1. But I just thought it was a very impressive performance for a guy who had to take on even more load and more responsibility when Chris Paul was, you know, despite playing after the injury, clearly wasn't at his best. And so it fell on Devin Booker's shoulders. I thought DeAndre Ayton was very good as well. But I thought Booker was their team MVP, and he led from the front for a very impressive victory.
Oh, he was awesome. He scored or assisted on 53 points, the 5th most by a player in his playoff debut over the past 20 years. Yeah, Booker was special in this. I loved seeing it. What'd you think of the ejection there on campaign, getting the 2 techs for the extracurricular activities and then some of the other techs involved? And it was all started, right, because of Chris Paul and LeBron thing
Paul
there.
LeBron.
I guess there are sort of 2 separate instances happening at the same time. But Tass, what do you think of the referee's decision to throw Cam out there and what went down?
Yeah, it was wild because I'm watching Chris Paul and LeBron, and Chris Paul's trying to pick up LeBron. They are still bros. They were battling it out. And then all of a sudden, I kind of missed what happened with Campaign and Alex Caruso, who's been phenomenal. I had to watch the replay to – to really absorb what happened. I was okay with it. He gave a body check, and then he threw the ball at Caruso. So that's kind of two separate techs. And then you had Montrezl Harrell doing a 50-yard pass to get in there.
He came screaming it.
Big hit from Harrell.
Yeah, he could have lowered the shoulder and lowered a huge boom and got ejected himself. Yeah. But he corralled campaign pretty well. I guess I was okay with it. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot happening there. I was distracted. But, yeah, he did two things, I guess.
But that second one, he shouldn't have got a tech to be thrown out for throwing the ball at Caruso like that. I mean, it's the playoffs. We always hear, like the refs swallow the whistle a little bit. Now, he sort of bumped him, and then Caruso came back, and he threw the ball. I mean, he threw the ball at his leg. If he cracks that off his head, at high velocity, sure.
But it's if he throws it at his face for sure.
Come on. Players always fight over the ball. Who can steal it and snatch it off the other guy? And he just flung it back at him. Now, the refs, okay, give him a tee and just say, all right, let's just calm down. But to throw him out of that game, again, if the Lakers come back and win that game, even though it's campaign, you know the conspiracy theorists are out there like, see, they're trying to, fix it here for the Lakers to win the game. So I thought that was a ridiculous one. I thought, okay, just give him one tech for sort of combine them and just say, all right, you get a tech. But that's, to me, not ejection worthy for that little incident that happened there. I just thought, playoff game, it's an intense game. It's a first game. Everyone's emotions are running high. The referees could just have calmed that one down a little bit. So I thought it was a little over the top.
It actually worked out for the Suns, though. They said it on the broadcast. It got Devin Booker some time to rest after looking at the replays a million times. It was like ended up being like a 5-minute, 6-minute break for a guy that was obviously doing a lot of heavy lifting there, playing a lot more minutes, especially without Chris Paul or in and out of the lineup after that. Like, yeah, it worked out well for Booker getting a quick blow there on the sideline. So. Yeah, I'm with you though, Lee. I don't think he really deserved an ejection for the little throwing the ball back, but they did the old 1-1 adds up to 2 and you're out of here campaign. But it is nice to see the feistiness, TK, in some of these series matchups already. Game 1, usually it sometimes takes till like game 3 or 4 until like some of this stuff starts happening because you just get tired of playing the same guy and same team. But some of these right from the jump, it happened.
Oh, no doubt. It's great to see a little playoff beef on the first weekend because you know it's going to pay off even further down the line, like you're saying, Skeets. These are just game ones. Who knows what's going down in game 5? Like, I was surprised to see that it was Bradley Beal who was trolling Joel Embiid for the entirety of Wizards versus Sixers. Seemed like it would be Westbrook versus Embiid, but Bradley Beal basically had a reaction for every single thing that Joel Embiid did out there. Between that, we got this game. I think Celtics versus Nets will likely get spicy at some point as well. Going to be fun.
All right, Tass, West playoffs, weekend MVP. Where are you going?
Well, Mavs Clippers was all about Luka Doncic. Obviously, the guy is just freaking phenomenal here in his second playoff stint. 30-point triple-double, banging home threes. And so they decided, all right, we got to double him. Let's get the ball out of his hands. But he was making such great passes. He was... just taking the Clippers' eyes and sending them wherever he wanted, because he would look off the Clippers to one guy, they'd have to take a step to one guy, and he'd find somebody else. So they got just that inch of space that they needed to shoot. Dorian Finney-Smith, Tim Hardaway Jr., and Jalen Brunson combined for 54 points, 19 of 29 shooting. That's all Luka Doncic. So, yeah, he has a 30-point triple-double, but he created everything for his team. In a game with Luka, Kawhi and Paul George, he was clearly the best player. And I just wondered if the Clippers have enough of the sense of urgency, because I was a little puzzled why, Kawhi didn't jump on Luka a little bit earlier. They're going to wait till game 2, I guess, to make that happen. And I also wonder about the Clippers when talking about Kawhi and not jumping over to him. Does Kawhi have the legs? Because he played late into the season under a minutes restriction. He wasn't playing heavy minutes because he was injured. Now he's getting doubled in the postseason. And his legs, I think, wore down at the end of the game. He had a good game, but late he couldn't come through. And I think it's telling that his legs weren't there when he missed a jumper short. 1:30 left. It was clear when it left his hand. And then another three short, then another free throw short with a minute 30 left. All that happened, they were tied at 100, and the last 3:12 remaining in the contest, Clippers scored 3 points the rest of the way. So I think that's worrisome. And then on the other end, in those last 3 minutes, they gave up two huge dunks because they weren't playing a center. Marcus Morris was their center. Serge Ibaka's not out there, which kind of puzzled me. They just didn't have anybody guarding the rim. And it was a tie game. Is Serge still injured himself? I mean, he missed 2 months, came back and played two regular season games. I think they need him to speed up quick, because if the defense is giving up easy strolls to the bucket, that's just not championship basketball. So this is a Mavs team that doesn't have a ton of weapons, even with Kristaps Porzingis having a bad game. Luka got it done. But some worrisome signs, I think, from the Clippers, just overall picture there.
For sure. We'll get to that a little bit more, that Mavs-Clippers game, in our next question here. But Trey, finish it off. West playoffs, weekend MVP for you goes to who?
Do or die, Dylan did it again. Gizzarito, 31 points, 7 rebounds for the most punchable face in the NBA. Apparently, that's the record for points in a Grizzlies playoff debut. He was the best in the third quarter. He was huge there. 14 points on 7 of 12 shooting, making some crazy shots, some incredible left-handed finishes. Brooks also got the game icing layup off a beauty of an inbounds play. Royce O'Neal got tripped up a little bit, ended up with Brooks being wide open underneath for the layup. Taylor Jenkins, his coach, called Dylan Brooks the Grizzlies' spirit animal, which I don't know if it is a grizzly, but whatever it is, he is setting the tone out there. He's bringing it defensively. I love how even when Dylan Brooks is having a good game on the offensive end, the broadcast just can't stop talking about how much he hacks as a defender. They're like, this guy is balling, and he's super physical. He's just ping-ponging around out there is what they called it, just running into guys. But he's setting the tone physically. The Grizzlies played harder. They were hungrier. They've been in a playoff race for basically a month with no Donovan Mitchell for the Jazz. That little bit of extra oomph from Dylan Brooks out there on the perimeter really pushed the Grizzlies over the edge.
Oh my God, he had like, I don't know, off the top of my head, like 3 amazing highlights that I hope they turn into Top Shot moments, Trey. Like the end, that one, like, I guess call it a crossover on Conley where he went like back between his legs, like bringing the ball from the back to the front, and then had the sweet finish inside. He was awesome. John Morant took over in the game too, Lili. That's the special part. It's like, all right, Brooks, bring it for those first three quarters, and then hand it over to John Morant to close it out. That's a huge win for the Grizzlies. I know we'll get into the no Donovan thing in a second here, but like, to make this a series, it's exciting that the Grizzlies pulled this off and continue this run that they're on here, led by, you know, Jaw special. Don't get me wrong, he's the real superstar, but like JV awesome again, especially against Gobert, and then Dylan Brooks doing what he's doing. It's fun to see, especially in a 1-8 matchup, that there could be something here.
Dylan Brooks has got Kawhi light vibes. Defensively, he's very tough. And on the offensive end, he said he's watched a lot of Jimmy Butler and LeBron, I think it was, playoff games. And you can tell he wants the ball late. You know, he like, I know Ja Morant did hit some big baskets as well, but not just this game. That Dylan Brooks is just not afraid of the moment. And shot well again, 13 for 26. It's 50%. That's fine. But, you know, he feels that moment and he really steps up and takes it. And on the other end, he only had 2 fouls last night, which is remarkable how he didn't get any more than that. But physically, he really gets into those guys. So this is great. This is actually what this series needed. I'm glad that it happened like this, because Donovan Mitchell, as you mentioned, they didn't end up playing. He wanted to play, but it was a late scratch. And the Jazz, I think, sort of felt, well, you know, they probably feel pretty comfortable. They're rested. They're going up against the fatigued somewhat Grizzlies, but it wasn't the case at all. The Grizzlies had much healthier legs down the stretch there in that one to pull it out. So great performance here by Memphis, and an exciting series prospect here, because Valanciunas is a tough matchup there for Gobert, because he's big and he's long and he's physical. And, you know, Gobert isn't able to sort of really just come over and swat those shots like he can do for some of the smaller centers that he goes up against. Valanciunas has had a great season, can really sort of get his body into him, and he's got that little jump hook, and that causes Gobert some problems.
Yeah, I love to see, too, current and former NBA players tweeting about how Dylan Brooks is the classic, like, love to have him on your team, hate to play against him. He is the ultimate, like, you show up little hungover for your weekend run with the guys, and like, you just get the one draw that's going to play you defensively that just won't stop playing way too hard and like hitting you on every play. And you're like, come on, man, are we really doing this? It's just so annoying when you're going
Total
against
Nelson,
a guy like that.
Right?
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking, Trey. Shout out to
Sweaty.
Nelson. Up in the
get out of here, Nelson.
You're just like, I don't want this,
get
man. I had too
me.
Much to drink last night. Like, stop bumping up against me, man. Give me some room. There it is. That goat.
Because he looks real sweaty as well. Like, he's one of those guys, you touch him and you're just covered in his sweat, and it's like, ah, this is even grosser. Get off me, man.
Oh man, I just thought of a great shirt. There should, because he's like, he really rocks this goatee here. Something goatee. There's got to be a Breaking Tea mashup in there with the way he's playing. We got to capitalize off that. So yeah, awesome game from Brooks.
He gave a gentle-ish headbutt too to Mike Conley before a play started while they're waiting there. It wasn't quite a headbutt, but it was there. Yeah, I saw my_low sent out the video, and I, you know, you can't, you're a ref, you almost can't call it. It could call it tech, but it's like, you know, just an a-hole move. Just and he's good at it.
Oh, he's fantastic. Oh, I love it. All right, our next question here. Back to the unheralded star of the game ones in the Western Conference. Taz, get us started. Where are you going?
Yeah, well, with the Suns, we're going to talk about Dembuck. We're going to talk about Chris Paul, but they don't win this game without DeAndre Ayton playing in his first playoff game, playing defense the way he did. The Suns allowed 90 points to a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis on it. I mean, that is something. He did a solid job of being Anthony Davis's primary defender, big part of why Anthony Davis had only 13 points. But I think he was equally as important slowing LeBron. LeBron didn't hit a shot at the rim with Ayton on the floor. In fact, he didn't take a shot at the rim with Ayton on the floor. The only time he took a shot within 10 feet of the rim and Ayton on the floor, Ayton blocked him. He blocked the king clean. He did have a couple buckets when Ayton sat, but I think there's a reason for that. At the rim, I should say. And Ayton offensively, too, definitely unheralded. 21 points, 16 boards. He missed one shot. He's 10 of 11. After the game, Anthony Davis said, "There's no way we're winning a game with me playing the way I did." And he added, "I know I'll be better." Mm. So he's going to go right at DeAndre Ayton. He made it, I think, a little too easy for Ayton. And we'll see if Ayton, in his first playoff stint, can stay on the floor when these dudes decide to go at him. I think it's got to be on Anthony Davis. Like, that is the man who needs to make it happen, because Bron, he's not totally himself right now. Bron had a very quiet game offensively, and Anthony Davis, he looks healthier, and he should be taking it at DeAndre Ayton. Will we just end up saying, you know, that was just a game one lollygag by those two dudes? I hope not. I hope the Suns keep taking it to them, I think they'll turn it on in game two anyway.
Ooh, Anthony Davis better have a bounce back game two, Trey, or he's going to start getting the Paul George hate thrown at him there on Twitter, I would think. He's got a championship, so, you know, that helps alleviate that a little bit.
Hit a game winner
in
the finals.
Yeah, but, you know, he's got to play obviously better, and he will. Are the Lakers, are you concerned at all about the Lakers winning this series after game one or no?
No, I'm not concerned about my pick either. I think Lakers in six still sounds pretty good. Like you're saying, Tass, that to me felt like a LeBron feel-out game. And as we know, LeBron has taught Anthony Davis his ways as well. Because if you're looking at it from the Lakers' perspective, they just held the Suns to 99 points and got 31 combined from Anthony Davis and LeBron. Right. Barely lost that game. They've got to be feeling they're doing okay. Anthony Davis, the one game he played against the Suns during the regular season, 42-12. Obviously, he can be a lot better, but Ayton outplayed him. Ayton outplayed LeBron in game one. That was super impressive, the way he was able to stay on the court and continue to make an impact from the first quarter to the fourth quarter. If he does that every single night, then you've got to get the best Anthony Davis every single game for the Lakers to advance in this series.
And we could see more games in the 90s here between these two teams, with the Lakers having the number one defense and the Spurs are, what, top six or something like that? Like, they're an elite defensive squad, too, especially if Ayton could play like that in the middle. You got Chris Paul, obviously, on the guard, and then Mikal Bridges is amazing, and Jay Crowder's great defensively. We could see some other low-scoring games, which is fine. Still entertaining when it's close. Trey, unheralded star, where are you going?
Well, Damian Lillard is the heralded star for the Blazers. 34 points, 13 assists in 40 minutes for Dame in game one. He outplayed Nikola Jokic, and that to me is probably the biggest reason, really, that the Blazers took game one, but their bench was instrumental in this win. Terry Stotts played three guys, and they still outscored the Denver Nuggets bench, 34-20. Anfernee Simons was great, 14 points, 5 of 6 shooting, hit 4 threes. He was just shooting over Marcus Howard getting some minutes out of nowhere. That's a short guy. I thought he was a Facundo Campazzo clone. Simons just elevating over him, knocking down the jumpers. But the real story off the bench was Melo. 18 points for Carmelo Anthony. 12 in the first quarter. The 4 3-pointers. Getting booed by the Denver Nuggets fans. This was Melo's first win in Denver since playing in Denver. That was fun to see Melo going off for the Blazers. Cantor was the other guy who came in off the bench for Portland. He took some bumps, and that's about it. Not a ton of depth for the Blazers, but still better than what the Nuggets had to offer last night, because Campazzo did an okay job as the point guard, I thought, but Marcus Howard, literally a rookie. Like, they're just rolling guys out there. As we've heard time and time again, it's not necessarily the replacement for the replacement, and that definitely showed up on the bench for the Blazers versus the Nuggets.
Yeah, I was watching some of these games with my buddy Grish, and I hit him with the question, what, like, veteran superstar would you just most want to see win a title, like, for their legacy? Like, you know, Harden, Chris Paul, maybe Westbrook, like, whatever. And he came out of left field and went with a Melo. I was like, whoa, you know, I'm not thinking Melo as a superstar anymore, but fair enough. It'd be wild if the Blazers went on another run here to the conference finals, maybe to the finals, but he was awesome in this. So Damian Lillard, like Trey said, did the heavy lifting there with 34. And that's shaping up, I think, to still be an awesome series too, Lili. And I know we can get into that in a second. But what's your pick for unheralded star in the West?
Well, I'm going back to the Clippers and the Mavericks game. And really, it's those Mavericks role players. Tass sort of addressed them there. Finney Smith, Tim Hardaway, Jalen Brunson especially. I'm going to put Kristaps Porzingis as a role player too in this one. He's not superstar. He was okay. Look, he was okay in this game. Hit a big three and had a nice dunk at the end there. But really, because Doncic, as great as he was, you know, fantastic triple-double, you know, with the 30 points there and 11 assists. Only 1 point in that fourth quarter. Now, a couple of assists, and a part of that is obviously because he's getting those guys involved. But those guys need to hit those shots, and they need to step up, and they did in that crucial game there, because the Clippers, I thought this game was theirs to be won, but they fell asleep. And Doncic, again, just showing that he doesn't need to have to go out there and score every time. He's more than happy for these other guys to hit shots, and they did that. So can they keep it up for the remainder of this series? If they can, then I think this series is wide open. But that's always the question with Tim Hardaway Jr. and Dorian Finney-Smith, those guys. How consistent can they be game in, game out? We'll find out pretty soon. But certainly game one was an impressive victory by the Mavericks. You know, again, Doncic, fantastic. But it wasn't just Doncic just dragging his team to victory. A lot of other guys really helped out.
Yeah, Jalen Brunson was a nice little stretch there, as we thought he might have at some point in this series. Well, let's spin it into this question, Lee, because I think you had Clippers in five, if I remember correctly, on one of our preview podcasts as you fight off and stiff arm your young son, Oscar, who makes an appearance every second show now. But are you, is this a series you want back in terms of predictions, your Clippers in five?
You know, I was unconvinced in my own prediction, saying that the Clippers should win this series in five games. And, you know, the reason why, because logically, and using my brain, I was like, the Clippers have got too much depth. You know, they've got the star players. They've had a very good under the radar quiet season. They've got to bounce back. They've got to answer some questions. But my gut was saying, it's the Clippers though, and it's the Mavericks. And I was like, no, brain overrules gut in this one, and I'm going with the Clippers. So I hate myself for saying it. I still think the Clippers can win it. But you're waiting for that moment where the Clippers really do show that they've got more talent than the Mavericks, but maybe they don't. Maybe they don't have it. I'm just Kawhi.
Is it fair to say the Clippers absolutely have to win Game Two?
100%. Yes. Yeah. I mean, because my
pivotal
pivotal Game Two. Because my thing is with the Clippers, it's like if they do get behind, are they going to implode like they did last season? I mean, they technically didn't get behind until they lost
up.
The game.
Maybe this is a good thing.
But that's what I really worry about for the Clippers. It's like, do they have that ability to really look each other in the eye and say, we can be better than this? Or do they basically just turn their backs on each other? Because that's kind of what happened to them against the Nuggets. So I really don't know what to make of this series. You know, but yes, the Clippers must win game two. And honestly, must win it convincingly, to be fair. They have to show, like, we're going to Dallas and that game one, we're going to flush that down the toilet. Because I'm perplexed that they got really sort of just brushed off their own court in game one.
Same question, Tass. Series prediction you want back? Any of them?
Well, I'll go with that the Blazers-Nuggets series, because at home, the Nuggets, their bench has to play better. The starters basically played even. But if the bench at home is going to play like that, how are they going to play on the road? That's a classic playoff thing. The bench players usually play better at home, and they were just schooled. Trey went through it there. Their bench was outscored by 12 points, and the Nuggets lost by 14. If the starters are playing even without Jamal Murray, it's the guys, yeah, who are replacing the guys in the starting lineup. It's a classic Stan Van. And yeah, if it's Marcus Howard, I mean, maybe you just got to shorten the bench a little bit. Paul Millsap has to be better out there. He still is Paul Millsap, but he's obviously getting older in age. But to me, you know, we can talk about the points and all that, but it's a young guy and a rook like Marcus Howard just being a billion miles away from Carmelo Anthony when Carmelo Anthony is shooting the ball. Yeah. It's just playing better defense. Watching Carmelo Anthony and score those 18 and Anfernee Simons with those 14, they were just wide open. And so if the bench players can't respond at home, I'm super worried about when they actually go to Portland. That was just that was a bad performance. And it's like, there's jitters, I guess, in the first half when they were especially bad, but there's no excuse for allowing open shot after open shot after open shot. So that's scary for them going forward.
Well, it'll be fun to see how they counter the Blazers' defensive decision to try and turn Jokic into basically Steve Kerr. It was something we actually talked about. Like, hey, man, go nuts. Try and score as much as you want. We're just going to try and take away everybody else because we know you want to play make. And, like, some of that was just them missing shots for sure, but it was definitely the strategy they leaned into, Trey. Like, Jokic, go for your 50. See if you can do it. Because we don't think you can win enough games without help. And we're just going to try and take away everybody else. I love the strategy. But I can't wait to see how Malone and Jokic and the Nuggets sort of counter in game two.
Yeah, just one assist for Jokic. I think it was the first time this season that he's had a single assist game. He probably racks up a few more if Michael Porter Jr. makes more than one from 10 from the three-point line. And it'll also be, I mean, I don't think you're going to hold Jokic down for an entirety of the game, or for the entirety of the series, but the way they committed to making making him a scorer, I think was huge. We'll see if the Blazers are able to continue doing that. Nurkic is a big guy, so he can at least bang bodies with Jokic. He knows his game a little bit, but the Blazers as a defensive team are not the top of the pops. They're a bottom five defense. So are they going to be able to string this kind of effort together for seven straight games? We shall see. But game one, that was some great defense on Jokic, despite the fact that obviously he still went off for 30 points. But I mean, if you're only giving up 30 and you're not giving up 20 to the other guys off the passes, you're looking all right.
Yeah, on Friday night, when we got to our Jazz Grizzlies prediction, I think all three of you guys went Jazz in six. And I said, I think you guys are just riding the wave of that big victory over the Warriors. I think it's Jazz in five. I'd like that back. And a big part of it is I thought, and it was my key to the series for crying out loud, Donovan Mitchell, I thought he was playing. I think we all did. Yeah. He almost said as much.
He did. He thought he was playing, they said. And he wasn't happy when they told him he wasn't playing. That's what I read prior to the game.
I know, it's like, did the Jazz, I mean, of course, hindsight 2020, you know, they pull out the victory, then it's great. Then it's like, oh, we had our superstar get another couple days rest, but they lose, and you're like, ooh, did you think maybe you could pull this one out without him? Which they obviously, of course, did, and they didn't. So I'm going to change my, I would want to change my Jazz in five pick. I don't think the Grizzlies are going to lose four straight games here, whether Donovan Mitchell is playing or not. They got nothing to lose. They're the youngest team to make the playoffs since the KD, Westbrook, Harden, Thunder era team there. There's like no fear in these guys. They're fun to watch. So I just can't see them losing four straight, even if Mitchell comes back in game two, which I expect he would. But it's not going to help their chances to the Jazz to win some of these games if they go 12 for 47 from three. And that was the concern too. We talked about it. I think, Trey, you brought it up. It's like, what happens when these threes aren't falling? They're a great three-point shooting team, 39% in the regular season. But they'll have some of these games where they just throw up some clunkers. Bogdanovich, 4 for 11 from deep. Conley, 3 of 11. Clarkson, 0 for 8. I thought he was horrible in this game. Ingles, 3 for 7, okay. Niang, 1 for 6. O'Neal, 1 for 3. And then Oney, 0 for 1. So, yeah, they're going to need some better three-point shooting there. I still think the Jazz win this series, but Jazz in 5. Again, I thought Mitchell was playing, and maybe it's a different outcome in game one, but there's no way that the Grizzlies are losing four straight. Not with Dylan Brooks, baby. Not with the way he's playing.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's one I would want back. All right, let's wrap it up with the final question here. Favorite highlight or random moment, again, observation from the Western Conference. Trey, where do you want to start?
I loved Coach Jamal Murray in the Nuggets game one against the Blazers. You know, Murray got injured earlier this year against the Warriors, so he's not able to contribute on the court, but he's still bringing the memes, reacting hardcore to basically everything that was happening out there. The big one was whose man's is this? After a foul call that went against the Nuggets. This is like Jimmy Butler level face reaction meme to me. I can see this sticking around for a while if the Nuggets are able to continue here in the playoffs.
Yeah, and like the hat just takes it to the next level. Yeah,
totally.
The soft trucker hat there, the mask pulled down. Yeah, it's a great meme reaction. It was nice to see him back on the sidelines. Of course, they wish they was playing, but that's a good one. I'll go next.
I mean, he was on the sidelines, but he was also almost on the court. Yeah. Jamal Murray was like the sixth man out there.
Yeah, he was invested in the Nuggets game there. I'll go with Kyle Anderson's fast break, and I throw fast break in air quotes. I love this play so much. Great steal. Man, he does that all the time where he just pops it out, and then look at this fast break. I know Favors is the one chasing him down, obviously not that fleet-footed
that makes
too.
It even better.
Run it back, JD. I want to see that again because it is unbelievable that this is in real time here. Okay.
When he gets to the free throw line.
And
just stops. Just waits.
What a play.
But Favors is like pumping his arms as well, which is like it's hilarious.
Full sprint from Favors. But
we see a violation on Giannis's 10 seconds free throw. Why can't we have a 10 second violation on a guy in a fast break?
Yeah, three in the key. In the key there.
That is incredibly slow for a fast break. But awesome steal. Yeah, another one there just like that.
Yeah.
He's got those crazy long arms, man. He is a great, great player. It's fun. To have a guy like that can contribute in this league. Tass, what about you? Favorite moment, highlight, whatever?
Well, Rudy Gobert fouled out of the game against the Grizzlies, and then he had a flop after he fouled out. I don't think I've ever seen this before. He literally went up to Kyle Anderson was on the baseline and just walked up to him and flopped when Kyle Anderson said, "Get out of my way," with a little touch. Rudy Gobert hit the floor hard. I've never seen anything like that. I hope I never see anything like that again. That was absurd. I mean, I did like guys all over the place. Trey mentioned Jamal Murray, like sort of on the floor. The NBA is really allowing guys to roam on the baseline and the sideline throughout these first 2 days. But Rudy Gobert, man, I couldn't take it. I had to point that out because it's even his play on the floor was enough to be mad at. But then. He should be a technical foul or something. But he should be fined after the fact.
Fine him, yeah.
I mean,
Being in the game and flopping, come on.
Yeah, it's just obviously trying to do anything to get an advantage for his team. You're right. I mean, it's very Chris Paul like to me. That's where my mind immediately goes. You can see Chris Paul like just he's like trying to think like maybe if I just sort of fall over here, you know, something will happen to help us get some free throws or something like that in a close game.
Rudy had a lot of thoughts about the refs last night. Obviously fouled out, and after the game, what was he saying? He's like, I don't know how it's being officiated. I don't know how this game's being officiated. Sometimes I foul guys and they say it's not a foul, then I foul them later and they call me for a foul, so they ask Shaq about it. You ever been like that, Shaq? No. No. I don't care how they're officiating the game. Just go out there and play it. And I think that's a little bit right. Just go hack people from the start. That's what Dylan Brooks does. It earns him a rep as a great defender. If you do it from the beginning, they're not going to call it the entire game.
Lee, wrap it up here, man. What's your favorite moment from the West?
Well, we got a wedgie, but I don't know if it counts. I think it should because it comes from the great Boban sitting down before the game. This is from Luka's Instagram. And now watch how he dislodges it. It's up there.
Know.
This is the best part. He barely...
He doesn't even jump at all.
And then he does the Shaq dunk afterwards as well, like with the legs going out there like that. I mean, what a moment. I mean, why not? We're getting crazy. Let's just throw that in. It's a legit wedgie. I mean, sitting down from the side of the court there.
I like that he's excited about it.
Yeah.
I wish
he had said it, or I wish someone had just said wedgie, but look at him. Then he just goes and tips it like... Yeah, that's like when I play with my boys out in the driveway. You know, I just stand up there and tip the ball, and then he dunks it. Like,
so you want to count that? Come on.
Why not? What's the wedgie shirt we got today? Let's have some fun. Let's just throw it in the pile.
Nice, nice.
No,
nice plug.
It's a great just plug to remind everybody again, Monday here on May 24th. From noon to midnight, you can go get yourself a baby blue wedgie t-shirt that will only be up there for the 12 hours to go cop that.
A Bobby Blue.
Oh, a Bobby Blue.
Bobby Blue.
I just realized we didn't get any of the first run white wedgie t-shirts. We'll have to make sure to get one of these guys. So there you go. So go grab that. NoDunks.com. Bobby From Blue. Noon Eastern to midnight tonight, the Baby Blue wedgie shirt. It looks awesome. That's just this nice summer look, I think, right there, TK. Maybe take the sleeves off that. Oh, goodness.
Oh, yeah, Skeets, because one of the things I'm always worried about with a light blue shirt, especially in the summer, pit stains.
Yeah.
Sleeveless, though? Feeling good.
Let them breathe.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yeah, Tassie, you teased it. It's so good. Going back to MSG, Kavitha Davidson, sports and culture writer at The Athletic. She's out there. She's at the game, fully vaxxed, showing off the seats there and the game one wristband. Love it, okay? But soon into the game, I guess sort of late first half, this is what shows up in front of her.
Oh,
and she
wow.
tweets, I'm sorry, but are you fucking kidding me? And for those listening, we're showing a photo of somebody in a rose jersey sitting one seat ahead of her. They're like up there in the second or third bowl there at MSG. That's fine. But they're wearing like a Dr. Seuss giant Knicks hat. I mean, it's like comically high. It looks to be a good, you know, 2 feet, 2.5 foot tall hat. That's a tall hattie for sure. And, you know, like, that's unbelievable.
Wow.
Like, you, like, Tess, like, somebody sits down in front of you at a game like this.
Oh, I'm saying something.
You have to say something, right?
Like, first game in a year and a half. let me grab my Seuss hat real quick.
Like, you, okay, respect. You know, so Knicks colors to your Dr. Seuss hat, awesome. You know, you're a Rose fan. You got the jersey, cool. But, okay, wear it to the game, wear it in the concourse, but you got to take that off. That's what you're doing, right, Tess?
Yeah, and Kavitha said she moved down a few seats and got the heck away from that
right,
hat
okay.
and was good. But like that, yeah, we're in the upper bowl here, and and you have, you know, you're up at least a row, I guess,
right.
and the hat still blocks the whole frickin' thing, blocks the whole court and the scoreboard,
yeah.
even though you're taller.
Yeah.
Imagine this guy sits down in front of you at a game.
Yeah. Are you saying I can't take this down to the fortress? Is that what you guys
if
are saying?
If you sat in front of me with that, I couldn't. It would take me 10 seconds, I would probably wait, to then smash that thing down on the top of your head. Hope
well,
you
sir,
there.
I believe we have business.
Yeah, you're going to pull out a glove and slap me or something like that? Yeah.
This guy's putting the farm in State Farm.
Oh, Lee, oh my God. If you do go down to the fortress, please take that and take a photo. Please.
Just pop it on.
Oh,
okay.
This is my Kyle Korver t-shirt. That's going to be my look.
All right.
Yeah, you throw some curls on those sideburns. Yeah. You got some serious Amish vibes.
Yeah.
There's some Amish furniture.
I was going to say, he's ready to sell you like a rocking chair or a table or something. That's going to be high quality for sure.
I thought that was a video that JD pulled up. I didn't think that was Lee live.
Yeah, it started talking.
I haven't got a lot of flexibility. It's certainly sitting up there balancing, but it's actually not too bad. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It looks taller than the last time you
yeah.
wore it. I don't know what happened. Did you get the top hat?
I crank this baby up another inch. Every time you see me, it's going to be a little bit bigger.
There's a little crank on it that goes up higher. had some Roman dick bills. All right. So tonight we got two games, guys. Heat Bucks at 7:30 and Blazers Nuggets at 10 p.m. Eastern. Excited to be obviously back tomorrow to talk about these games. Any predictions want to be made, Trey? Like, you don't even have to say the game. Is there something, a player, something that's going to happen in either of these games that you just want to throw at the people, talk into existence? What do you got?
Bounce back game for Jimmy Butler.
Okay.
You know, he's not a jump shooter. I think Jimmy Butler knows that. He's one of the guys who you're like, at the end of the season, you're like, wow, he took 40 threes for an entire year. He took 9 in game one. That's too many for JB. So it's got to be layups. I think he'll be better in game two.
Yeah, Tass, who do you think is more likely to go up 2-0 after tonight? Is it Milwaukee or is it the Blazers on the road?
I don't have confidence in either.
Wow.
I mean, I guess the Blazers. I think the Heat bounce back, but yeah, I'm definitely worried more so about the Nuggets.
Okay.
Not getting enough production out of everyone 2 through 13 on their roster.
Sir Ellis, same question. Mm. Yeah, what do you think? Who's more likely to go up 2-0?
I think it is more likely that the Blazers, just because I think after what we saw in game one there, their backcourt depth is tough for Denver right now. They got couple of guys they can throw, but I think Lillard and CJ, if they can really take advantage, they can put some distance between themselves and the Nuggets. I would like to see a much better performance from Giannis and the Bucks, and I think this is a great chance for them to go two up and be in a strong position against the Heat.
Yeah.
Because as I say, they had a bad game and pulled out the victory, which is all you need to do in the playoffs. So if they can play better, then they can really show that they are the better team than the Heat. But not sure that's going to happen. I think Jimmy's just going to really grind them down tonight. So I think it's the Blazers more likely, but hope the Bucks do it too.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow to break down both of those games in a lot of detail because we'll have a lot more time to do the nitty-gritty with those series. So join us tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, live on YouTube. We'll get it up to your podcast feed soon after that. Email in your questions and comments to nodunks@theathletic.com for our Beach Steppin' podcast later this week. Go to nodunks.com. Especially again today from 12 to midnight to grab that limited edition baby blue, Boban blue wedgie shirt there. Looking beautiful here on the stream team. Thanks to everybody for joining us. Get yourself an athletic subscription too, theathletic.com/nodunks. They got a great deal on right now if you are not a subscriber to The Athletic. And that's it. I will see you guys tomorrow. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, our email is nodunks@theathletic.com, our social media accounts are all nodunks or nodunks inc, and we'd like you to send us a photo of you in your finest hat, and if it's a tall hat, even better. We'll share them tomorrow on the show if you got love some it. Good hats.
All right, yeah, tall hats only, though. Don't send us a baseball
tall hat
photo.
We don't want a short hat.
Or a bulky
don't
hat.
Don't want no eeny, meeny, short hat,
bulky hat, tall hat, comical hat, just... get creative with your hats like Lee Ellis there. Look at that guy. That's a guy that knows a lot about the NBA. Embrace the name, people.